Specific statistics about people experiencing homelessness are hard to come by. However, twice a year, Wisconsin conducts a count of people living on the streets during a designated one-night period. The latest survey is from January 2018. It found that more than 3,000 Wisconsinites live in shelters or on the streets. The pandemic worsened homelessness in Wisconsin and is making many communities desperate to solve these crises. And the problem is bigger than homelessness. More than 28,000 households in Chippewa and Eau Claire counties struggle to afford the basic cost of living, according to the United Way of the Greater Chippewa Valley. Well, today on the West Side, we talk about homelessness and housing insecurity, what to do if you need help making rent, and we'll explore some solutions for our Western Wisconsin communities. I'm Claire Neipert. Welcome to the West Side. I'm glad that you're here with us this morning. Today we're joined by Carrie Poser, who's the director of the Wisconsin Balance of State Continuum of Care, Susan Wolfgram, who's the co-chair of the Jonah Affordable Housing Task Force, and Karen Peterson, who's a former nurse and a current social worker at the Chippewa Valley Street Ministry in Eau Claire. But first, we'll hear from Eau Claire-based journalist Julian Emerson. He's been covering housing insecurity and homelessness in our area for more than 25 years. Hi, Julian, and welcome to the West Side.
Be here.
Julian, why did you start to report on homelessness? What caught your interest in this subject?
Sure. I'm not really sure. And in my earlier years, I wrote a little bit about homelessness and wrote about, you know, general stories about poverty, unemployment, stories like that. But it was really early winter of 2013, 2014 when I started noticing more people walking downtown who appeared to be homeless. And I was just curious. So I just started hanging out on the streets, getting to know a few of them. And it was a really, really slow process. And I was very much out of my element. And it took me some time to start to learn the ropes of doing it. But it was really just born of, I guess, journalistic curiosity about what did homelessness look like in Eau Claire, and what would it be like to be homeless on the streets of Eau Claire during the hard winters that we have?
Mm. Is there a story that you've reported on that sticks out to you or that's really impacted our community's conversations about homelessness and housing insecurity?
I hope those stories mattered in some way. I guess the series that stood out most, and certainly the experience that stood out most to me, was myself and former Leader Telegram photographer Marissa Wojcik spending as much of the winter as we could of 2013, 2014, as much of that winter as we could on the streets with homeless people. Just, you know, really it was an educational process for us about their lives. And then we eventually ran a series of stories and photos and videos related to that topic. That was the most meaningful, but that really sort of sparked an interest in me, I guess. And I, on and off, have tried to continue my work on that front. I don't do it like fully regularly. Sometimes I wish I could, but I also it's really hard, daunting work. And I've learned to very much respect the people who do that on either a part-time or volunteer or full-time basis, because it does take an emotional toll on you when you see the lives that homeless people lead.
So are there any changes that you've observed since you've been covering this beat in regards to like the rates of homelessness and housing insecurity in our area?
Well, as you alluded to at the beginning of this, it's homeless counts. It's a very inexact science, right? There's the point in time count, which just counts the people who are on the street, who local officials find at any given time. School district has count of how many of its students report being homeless. There are all of these shelters and how, you know, you can count the people at those. But I suspect by far the biggest number of people I would consider homeless, they don't meet the federal definition, but people who I think myself and others would consider homeless, who don't have a bed of their own to sleep in any given night, is people couch surfing. If you total that entire number, all of those different groups, definitely here just in the city of Eau Claire and in the Chippewa Valley, we're definitely well into the hundreds of people who I would call homeless.
Every personal story that involves housing insecurity is different, but Julian, as you're reporting, what do you see are some of the root causes that contribute to these issues?
You're right, everybody's story is different. There definitely are commonalities, and I guess it depends on which different classifications of homeless people we talk about. I would say the chronically homeless, the people who I have gotten to know living on the streets, mental health and substance abuse, substance addiction. Those are common themes, the two most common threads I saw with that crowd. But in terms of overall homelessness, there are so many reasons. The basic general one is people can't afford housing. Many people can't afford housing as their wages, they lose jobs or they have a medical calamity. They can't get childcare, and they have a transport, their car breaks down and they can't afford to fix it, so they can't get to their job, so they lose their job. And then generally low people whose wages don't rise along with living expenses. Eau Claire used to be, the Chippewa Valley used to be a relatively cheap place to live. And in the last decade, it is no longer that. You can see that in the housing market. You can see that we have the most expensive healthcare costs in Wisconsin here. Childcare costs are very expensive here. So there are a lot of reasons. People who don't have paid vacation time, people who face transportation issues, people who work maybe two or three part-time jobs, but they don't have health insurance. And then suddenly there's a significant illness in their family, and suddenly they can't afford their home and to make their rent or house payments anymore. There are so many different reasons, but it all comes down to, for many, whatever reason it is, they can no longer afford to keep a roof over their head.
What do you hear from those you speak with about their obstacles and needs and wants?
That's a really good question. So often, I think in all of our society, policy is made kind of in a top-down manner, and it oftentimes doesn't really include the wishes or needs and wants or knowledge of the people who are experiencing, whatever situation. And in this case, it's homelessness. Recently, I've been trying to get out once a week or so and just spend some time on the streets with homeless people. And I've been asking some of them, many, for different reasons, some aren't willing to talk or able to talk with me, but there are a handful of them that I have some kind of relationship with. And I will ask them, like, what would you like to see? What would be helpful to you? And a lot of them, they talk about the need for mental health. They talk about the need for assistance with job training. They talk about the need for help with transportation, with bus passes. They talk about the need for more services to help people break their addictions. So they're definitely calling for all of that. And I know the agencies and folks here in the Chippewa Valley who work for the agencies that help the homeless people are doing that work, and they too talk about the need for more resources. While numbers are hard to come up with, it seems the homeless population has grown in recent times, and it probably got bigger during the pandemic. And now, at some point, the rental protections, the ban on evictions is going to go away. I believe it's set to end in October now. It's been extended several times, but at some point, that's going to go away. And there are very real concerns about a whole new group of folks being evicted from their homes and then being, homeless. Whether they can couch surf or whether they're literally out in the streets, we don't know. But there are real concerns about that. So it seems like the need has gotten bigger since my winter on the streets 7 years ago. And there's definitely more talk, and you're going to hear more about that later in the program. There's a lot of conversation and a lot of effort going on here locally about trying to find ways to address it. But in one way or another, it's going to take more resources, and I guess we're going to see if there's the political will here to do that.
Homelessness is often thought of as a more urban issue, and we will talk a lot about Eau Claire in this conversation, but housing insecurity exists in rural areas too, and there it's often even more hidden. So how do you see our communities addressing rural homelessness?
I made some calls to some folks about this question because I didn't feel like I knew that much about it. You're right in saying it is more hidden in those communities. It's even more hidden. It's a lot. It seems to be like you don't see, because there aren't often services in those smaller communities to address homelessness. They don't often have shelters, although there are a few, but they don't often have shelters. They don't often have like a daily place like the community table where people can come and get meals. Because of that, it's more hidden. It often takes the form, more often it's, from what I was told, more often of couch surfing, somebody staying with a friend or a relative, or bouncing from place to place. And then sometimes traveling from community to community. And some of the homeless people in Eau Claire actually make their way here sometimes from some of the other communities, because they come looking for some kind of service because they oftentimes can't find it in their community. In terms of resources, Clara, in those places, there are some, but there aren't a lot, is what I'm being told. There are some, like for instance, Little Loyal was in Clark County. It's a small community there. They actually have a shelter there. It's operated by Catholic Charities. So there are places, rural small communities that are trying to address this, but by and large, there aren't many services. And sometimes there's really not even, from what I can tell, much of a recognition on the part of local officials that homelessness is an issue there. It seems quite hidden most of the time. But I'm also told by people at the state level that yes, definitely there is homelessness all across Wisconsin, including in rural areas.
Well, you mentioned before that Eau Claire in our community is coming up with some solutions. Are there any that stick out to you or excite you?
Well, yes. I mean, there are tons of really good efforts being attempted here. The most recent that's being discussed, and you'll hear a lot more about this in the upcoming portion of your show, there was recently Eau Claire developer JCAP is proposing partnering with agencies here that serve homeless populations to develop a 24/7 shelter that would address numerous needs, but among them, chief among them, would be providing a place for homeless people to stay during the daytime. Partly why homelessness is more visible in Eau Claire right now is that Sojourner, after being relocated during the pandemic, is now back at its downtown site. Some homeless people stay there during the night, but during the daytime, they don't have a place to go. They used to go to the Positive Avenues day shelter, and they used to hang out at the library and other locations. The library is closed for remodeling. Positive Avenues is now doing a different model and does not operate its day shelter anymore. And so homeless people are just a lot more visible during the daytime now in downtown Eau Claire. And so I think that's partly why there's more discussion about it now. I also just think the numbers are bigger. And again, it's hard to quantify that exactly, but anecdotally, everybody I talked to says the numbers overall seem bigger as well.
You're listening to The West Side. We're exploring homelessness and housing insecurity in Western Wisconsin and some short-term and long-term remedies that could be available. You just heard from Julian Emerson, who's an Eau Claire-based reporter who covers these issues. Later, we're talking with Carrie Poser of Wisconsin Balance of State Continuum of Care, Susan Wolfgram, who co-chairs the Jonah Affordable Housing Task Force, and Karen Peterson of Chippewa Valley Street Ministry. I'm Claire Neipert. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11, it's the Larry Mueller Show. Timing is important when it comes to prairie gardening. Larry talks with our native gardening expert about what should be on your fall maintenance checklist, including seeding and transplanting. You'll also get some advice on no-mow lawns. That's next up on this station. You might take clean drinking water for granted, but some Wisconsin residents can't drink the water coming from their taps. Next week on the West Side, we invite in a representative from the DNR and the utilities manager from the city of Eau Claire to talk about PFAS. Those are chemicals that can be found in water from wells that don't break down in the environment and are related to adverse health effects like increased cholesterol, cancer, and thyroid disease. That's next week at 10 on the station. Well, today on the West Side, we're talking about housing insecurity and homelessness in our area. You can join the conversation by calling 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. We now welcome to the conversation Carrie Poser, the Eau Claire-based director of the Wisconsin Balance of State Continuum of Care. That's a statewide organization with a mission to help communities end homelessness. Good morning, Carrie. We also welcome Susan Wolfgram, the co-chair of the Jonah Task Force on Housing Affordability. Hello, Susan.
Good morning, Clara.
And also, we welcome Karen Peterson from the Chippewa Valley Street Ministry. She's helped people experiencing homelessness, first as a nurse and now as a social worker. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thanks, Clara.
Well, we just heard journalist Julian Emerson describe barriers to housing and getting shelter. What do you each see as the biggest challenge that we face as a community when it comes to housing insecurity and homelessness? Susan, let's start with you.
Thank you, Clara. It's a very complicated question. I think that I would start with saying that we have a very low vacancy rate in Eau Claire. And so what that means is that our landlords do not really need to take any kind of risk with high risk tenants. We very much need intentional housing for those with high rental barriers. So that would include eviction and conviction histories, those with inadequate income and poor credit. You know, in Eau Claire, in the past couple of years, I also sit on the Plan Commission. And in the past couple of years, we've built over 1,000 units for those of our neighbors who make, I don't want to get in the weeds here necessarily, for those who make between 60 and 120% of our county median income. And our county median income hovers around $60,000 a year. So that means that for those that are making between $36,000 and $72,000 a year, and primarily 80 to 120%, we've had over 1,000 units being built. But we have nothing being built for those that are making 50% of the county median income and below. And I'll stop in a second here. 37.7% of our entire workforce in Eau Claire is in our 25 lowest paid occupations, making $30,000 or less, which is 50% of the county median income. There are so many reasons for that, and I'll just touch on one, is that the developers that I work with, that we work with the task force, they want to do something. They want to contribute something, but building costs are very, very high, and they're just not able to do it without public and private partnerships, which we need a lot more of. And also, Carrie might touch on this more. WIDA tax credits that provide incentives for developers to build for those that are experiencing very low income. We can't rely on that. We're lucky in Eau Claire if one developer a year gets a WIDA tax credit development approved. So I'll stop there. But most definitely, you know, housing vouchers mean nothing if you have nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. They expire and then you have nowhere to go. And I think we still have approximately a 1 year waiting list in Eau Claire City and County for those that are in need of housing. So I could talk a full 2 hours myself, so I'm going to stop. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll touch more on housing affordability later, but I'm going to turn this question toward you, Carrie. Carrie, what do you see are the big changes that we need to make, both as a community and as a state, when it comes to housing insecurity and homelessness?
Hi, thank you for having me on. So that is a huge question. So if I wave my magic wand and what's the answer to ending homelessness, not only in just Eau Claire, but also the state, there are so many different components. I wanted to also mention, you know, Julian indicated that he had reached out to some rural folks, and I do want to confirm that there is homelessness in every single county in Wisconsin. It certainly looks a little bit different in different places. In Eau Claire, it happens to be in your face, downtown. And then I think that's generated a lot of conversation. In order to end homelessness, Susan is absolutely right. You have to have places for people to live. If you don't have access to permanent housing solutions and places for people to live, what is the alternative? They're going to sleep outside, they're gonna sleep in their car, and they're gonna bounce around, pitch a tent in a cornfield. I mean, they're gonna live in caves. They're gonna live wherever they can, but unless we have actual places for them to live, the cycle will continue. I would add to it funding for case management to meet the actual needs of the people experiencing homelessness. There's a lot of money coming from the federal government to pay for rent and to pay for housing vouchers, and not a lot of it is tied to the human beings that are doing the full-time work to walk alongside of people as they're trying to navigate these systems. The third thing I would say is better access. You know, for some places, they have mental health resources and addiction services and supports, but the access to those services are ridiculous. You know, if you identify that you want to get help with your, you know, your addiction, and then they're going to put you on a 2-month waiting list. So what happens in the meantime? So for me, those three things pretty much carry over for the whole state, but specifically looking at Eau Claire, you know, those are three really big three challenges that need to be overcome if you want to make a significant dent in the homeless population.
Mm. Karen, as someone who works firsthand with people experiencing homelessness, what is top of your mind when you think about what our community needs?
That's yet another big question. And there's a ton of needs, but primarily what I see with the program I work with sees we need help with mental health, AODA services, and like Carrie said, when people are referred, if they want help, being on a wait list for 2 or more months is not helpful. We need a place for people to go during the day so they can be safe. There's a lot of vulnerable individuals out on the street currently that are at risk for being taken advantage of by other people. They got a lot of medical concerns. So just, you know, safety issues in general is what I see as being a priority.
Chippewa Valley Street Ministries website publishes monthly journals about housing issues. And one point that stood out to me that the August edition made is that it's important to keep people who are experiencing homelessness and living that and also experiencing housing insecurity at the forefront of our discussions when it comes to solutions. Karen, why is that so important?
I can't recall if it was Carrie or Susan that talked about funding being for properties, but the properties need to be filled by people and the people need to be the heart of the discussion. People have basic human rights for safety, housing, medical, and I think that has somewhere gotten lost in the community or in the country. And I think we just need to look at their needs. A lot of the people that we work with have nothing but a story to tell, and sometimes that story needs to be heard by everyone. It's not just that they don't want to work. It could be related to a mental illness that they lost their job, which meant that they lost their housing. It could be a medical situation. There's so many roots of homelessness that I think we forget about that. So anyway, yeah, like I said, it just needs to be the person needs to be the center of the discussion.
We're talking about housing insecurity and homelessness in our area on the West Side. If you would like to join this conversation to share your stories, your experiences, you can call in at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, I'd like to shift our conversation now toward solutions. Susan, you've kind of worked, toward solutions. And I'm wondering, who are we looking toward to lead us to solutions? Who is at the forefront of creating these ideas in our community?
We have a very deep capacity in Eau Claire for housing advocacy with our Dairyland Housing Coalition, our Jonah Affordable Housing Task Force, our city, a number of developers that are getting on board, and three things that I can just touch on that I'm involved in is that our task force is creating a tenant-landlord resource center with our primary purpose of early prevention of eviction with mediation, extremely early at the first sign of trouble, so to speak, that landlords or tenants can reach out to us and we're going to sit down with them, because one eviction can change the entire trajectory of an individual or a family's life. The second thing is that our city, we have a one-year pilot program for something called the Landlord Support Program, which has two parts. One is a ready-to-rent program for high-risk prospective tenants, and one is a risk mitigation program for landlords to give them some incentive to take a risk on a high-risk tenant. And our first class graduated from the ready-to-rent program last evening. And then the third thing is what Julian touched on, is that one of our developers, Alex Paternus and Brian Johnson from JCAP, have given us really what I perceive as a golden opportunity, community-led, informed by impacted people, that they are willing to build, let's just say, 24-hour services. I don't like to say a shelter, but 24-hour services. So for instance, when folks, unhoused folks, leaves the Sojourners downtown location at 7 a.m., there will be transportation to take them to, let's call it, a day center. And that we also then, this would be community design, taking the best ideas from different facilities across the state, from Minnesota, where we may have permanent supportive housing in a different building on that site. We may have transitional housing. We have a lot of interested agencies in Eau Claire wanting to provide mental health services, addiction services. But a lot of folks, they just need a place, as Karen said, to be safe, to lay their head, to not be in a downpour, a snowstorm, 95 degree heat. You know, I think a lot of us, we talk a lot about, yes, the solution to being unhoused is a home, but it's on a spectrum. It takes a long time to find an unhoused person a home. And that is the goal for all of us that are in this. But it's on a spectrum. We have to be able to provide a safe place for people while we work with them to get to that home. So I'll stop there, but those are the three major things that I'm involved in. And I have a lot of faith in our community. We have a lot of really good synergy right now and excitement about 24-hour services with this opportunity. So thank you.
Carrie, you're a part of the Wisconsin Interagency Council on Homelessness, and the council published a report in 2017 that offered guidance for communities across the state to use as they combat homelessness. One big takeaway I had as I read the report, homelessness is deeply complex, so simply taking someone off the street and moving them into shelter or subsidized housing is not enough. Instead, kind of like we're talking about, we can better help others by providing what's called a continuum of care. Carrie, can you describe what that term means?
Sure. So continuum of care is used in a variety of different contexts. So when you introduced me, you said I was the director of the Balance of State Continuum of Care. And locally, we can use that same phrase, continuum of care or continuum of service, to describe kind of what Susan is referencing, that there is an entire path here. We start with very early levels of prevention, the need to keep people in their housing to the best of our ability. But then when that doesn't work, then what happens? Then there's this big gap, right, between you're evicted and maybe you can stay with your sister or your cousin, and they have high food bills or high electric bills, and then that becomes challenging to be able to stay there. So what can our system do to help keep you maybe staying with your sister, because we know that that is probably better while you're looking for a permanent solution than having to enter the emergency shelter system. The emergency shelter system in Eau Claire is fantastic. It is still traumatic to be unfortunately left to sleep someplace else and not have someplace safe that feels safe to you. So when we talk about continuums of service, we're talking about prevention, we're talking about outreach, we're talking about meeting people where they're at, asking them what they need, and then figuring out how we can deliver that rather than asking them to meet some mission that we have. Diversion efforts, which is, you know, can we offer the sister or the cousin, you know, a gas card or food in order to help keep that person that doesn't have a place to stay, staying there while we work on a plan. Making sure you have the right amount of emergency shelter, motel voucher services available, making sure you have the right level of case management available to meet the different needs. People with high level mental health AODA related challenges need more case management, but they need higher qualified case management. It's not necessarily the same thing. And so we need to be able to recognize, to invest in that kind of training and support for those case managers doing that work. And then we need rental assistance and, you know, flat out places for people to live, so apartments. And then you're not even done yet, because then you also need to provide follow-up levels of service to make sure that if there are issues or situations that occur, people know how to reach out, what's their safety net, who do they contact, who do they need to, you know, reconnect with to circle back. That is the continuum of service, is making sure that in your community you have all of that and you have the right amount of that and you are funding it in the right way, because not all funding sources are equal. Many funding sources have lots of strengths. So you need creative solutions. That means you need creative money. That means you need non-federal money, because federal money has a lot of rules. And that's, just to be quite honest, not going to end homelessness by itself. So a continuum of service with the right amount of funding and a significant look at each of those components from the eyes of the people that we are trying to serve is going to bring us much further in this process than deciding for them.
According to the American Psychological Association, rates of mental illness among people who are homeless in the United States are twice the rates found in the general population. And mental health help, like therapy, is hard to access without insurance. Karen, you've worked as a nurse and now you work as a social worker. How do you see us addressing mental illness and mental health in our shelters?
I believe that we need to have, as Carrie said, qualified individuals working with these folks that are needing help. It's also difficult for people who are homeless to be compliant and consistent with their medications due to not always knowing where they're going to be or if medications are hard to keep track of from a day-to-day basis. So it's a combination of medication and therapy. Not just one will solve the problem.
We do know that there are disparities in who experiences homelessness beyond mental health. A report by the Wisconsin Interagency on Homelessness found that a Black Wisconsinite was more likely by a factor of 10 to experience homelessness than was their white neighbor. And among the LGBT community, they report, the rates of homelessness are also elevated. That's especially among youth. As many as 40% of youth experiencing homelessness identified as LGBT. Susan, as we think about these solutions, how are we working to address these disparities?
Well, I think we're only just beginning to. I'm very much an advocate for making structural changes and in our system at all levels of our local government to have seats at the table for our Black, Indigenous, people of color community members, our LGBTQ community members, and other historically underrepresented groups, having not only these folks sitting at the table, but encouraging their voices to be heard to actually guide the process. I want to add one thing that I think is important is that on June 6th, Eau Claire County, our county board, signed on to the health department, a statewide health department resolution that racism is a public health crisis. And the core, the fundamental core of that resolution is that historically underrepresented groups need to be centered at our local government, and impacted people need to be, as Carrie referenced, as Karen spoke about, they need to be, if not leading, guiding and informing all of our efforts. So I know that I myself and others continue to advocate for that structural and system change.
We're talking about homelessness and housing insecurity in Western Wisconsin with our guest Susan Wolfgram, the co-chair of the Jonah Affordable Housing Task Force, Carrie Poser of the Wisconsin Balance of State Continuum of Care, and Karen Peterson of the Chippewa Valley Street Ministry. You can join this conversation by calling 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. 5615, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Claire Neipert. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Every Thursday at 10 on this station, it's Spectrum West, where Al Ross explores the arts, music, and humanities in Western Wisconsin. The show includes in-depth behind-the-scene interviews and stories about area writers, musicians, theater, visual arts, and much more. That's Spectrum West, Thursdays at 10 on this station. This is the West Side. We're talking about homelessness and housing insecurity in Western Wisconsin. I want to turn now to a very specific solution that we've referenced throughout the program, and that is the 24-hour facility that's being proposed by JCAP, which is an Eau Claire developer. And it's not clear yet how much the facility will cost, but the company will seek funds from the American Rescue Plan and from the City of Eau Claire and Eau Claire County to pay for the project. So an early plan of the project has 130 beds on one level of the building, and developers say that the building could be as big as three stories high. So one concern that some have raised about JCAP's proposal is that it would be unsafe to house so many people in one facility. Carrie, are you concerned about that?
You know, certainly the size of the building is... So I'm going to take a pause, and I'm going to say that the idea that it would provide 24-hour services is a much more palatable solution to me than housing all or attempting to house all people that are homeless in one area. That historically does not work very well, whether it's across the country or even just within Wisconsin. Being able to integrate people that have low income or no income into communities works better. We've seen that through scattered site housing models where we're not building a building and then having everybody live there, but instead using market rate apartments and having people develop community throughout the city. Now, the idea of having a place that is accessible for people to go during the day is certainly apparent. If that is the need that is being expressed by the people that are outside and they're willing to go there, I think that that is a fantastic idea. I think, as we've all just talked about, it's important to know what are they willing to do, because if we build something that nobody wants to go to, then we haven't really solved anything. I think that COVID showed us that there was some challenges with congregate sheltering. Congregate sheltering means having a building with lots of people in it, and what the health impact can be when you have a disease like COVID. Secondarily, a lot of the local supports were reduced. You know, the library happened to close around that time, and many other folks were shut down in terms of being able to offer services. And people were left to be outside and have nothing else to do. And that, you know, COVID showed us a lot of different things. That's several of them. So I think having a 24-hour facility that has options for people, that if people are ready and willing and want to engage in these services that were being talked about, I think that that's fantastic. I want to caution away from the idea that we're going to make one big building and have shelter and then have all the housing and then all the homeless are going to go away and that's going to solve the problem. Because I've heard that now coming out of different media sources, and that is not going to be the solution. But I am super excited that there are developers even willing to talk about it.
Karen, you could, as a social worker, be one of those service providers that could potentially have a space in that facility. What is your view on, you know, combining medical and social services and a living space all in one facility?
I think that initially it would help to create availability and consistency for individuals needing those services. Right now, accessing that either due to lack of information, transportation, fear of going into a facility, I think causes conditions to worsen before they are better or improve. I think if people could go to or already be in a facility with those services, it would decrease the fear and potentially improve their conditions sooner.
Hmm. Susan, you've been a part of some of these conversations surrounding this new project. What excites you about it? What are your thoughts?
Well, first, I just want to clarify that initial description that was in the media, that was just a very initial idea. And we've had a number of community stakeholder conversations since. So that is not the intent. The intent is what I described earlier, that there will be a spectrum of services that will be informed by impacted people, designed and led by the community, and hopefully relatively seamless. So what's exciting is that we have had two large community conversations already, and another one is going to be organized by the city within the next month. We just presented the idea, and Alex and Brian like to call it an idea, again, because it's not a specific proposal. We don't know what it's going to look like because the community and impacted people are going to inform that. So we presented the idea to the Dairyland Housing Coalition at their meeting on Wednesday. We have the business community, neighbors, all going to be weighing in. And what we're hoping is that the stakeholders will commit to the series of conversations that hopefully then will lead to 24-hour services that meet the needs of our unhoused neighbors. That's the goal. So I'm excited by the synergy. There are some primary stakeholders that have shared at these meetings that they have not been a witness to this kind of synergy and excitement in Eau Claire around meeting the needs of our unhoused neighbors until now. So what I'm hoping is that we do not let this momentum die, but that we all get out of our silos and that we continue to collaborate and move forward. So that's what excites me, Clara.
a term that you use there. You said silos. Actually, silo breaking is another solution strategy recommended as part of the Wisconsin Interagency Council on Homelessness's 2017 report. And essentially, what that phrase means is that organizations need to communicate and combine resources and work together to meet that common goal. Carrie, you are a part of the Wisconsin Interagency Council on Homelessness. Do you see a potential for silo breaking to happen here in this situation?
Absolutely. And I see it not only in the proposed idea, but also even if that were not to occur. Silo breaking is something that should be part of our daily experience as we work with people that are homeless. The idea being that it takes a team. Some people say it takes a village. Though all of those kinds of phrases come around the idea that people that are homeless impact a variety of systems of care, right? They are involved in lots of different things. And if we could bring all of those folks together to the table to help create solutions and work together to address the needs, rather than having, you know, one person case managing the physical health and one person case managing the mental health and one person case managing the housing, if those people all communicated and were working together and putting that person first and then surrounding the services as a team, there's a better chance of sustainable change can occur.
One of another solution that I'd like to talk about today is something Susan mentioned earlier, the Tenant Resource Center that is, you know, maybe an idea for Western Wisconsin. And it would be modeled after the Tenant Resource Center that's in Madison. Susan, can you talk a little bit more about this? How would this resource center help Wisconsin residents?
So we received a grant from the Pablo Foundation, and currently right now we are developing our website, which will, I like to describe it as just a treasure trove of resources. We're primarily going to be focusing on Eau Claire with the Madison Tenant Resource Center as our mentor, and focusing again, as I mentioned earlier, on very, very early prevention, outreach, and mediation. So that would mean, you know, a very wide dissemination of the program for landlords, for tenants. Right now, as we all know, what generally happens is that the problems begin and they continue and they continue until a notice is given. A notice might be ignored, then the eviction process starts. And once it starts, it's in nobody's best interest. It's not in our community's best interest. Every eviction destabilizes a community. So again, an eviction can change your trajectory of your entire life. We hear these stories every single day. So we're very excited. We are in the Grace Lutheran Church. We have space there. We're hoping to have an open house later this year and begin mediation services by the beginning of 2022.
Susan, I want to end our conversation with actually a question from a listener. Jackie from Eau Claire is wondering, and this is back again about the 24-hour facility that's an idea that's happening. She's concerned about the need for accessible and comprehensive mental health services for people experiencing homelessness to kind of avoid interactions that might happen with law enforcement. And she's wondering, Susan, do you know how will the new 24/7 facility offer access for mental health for people experiencing homelessness?
So, Jackie, we don't know the answer to that yet. And that's the beauty of having a series of discussions about this idea, being community-led, also being led by impacted people, is that we are going to hear about how that has happened in different areas, how it can happen here. So right now that is an open question, but it's exciting because, again, the depth of knowledge that we have not only in Eau Claire, but in our state about how those needs are being met is exciting.
And as we wrap up our conversation quickly, Carrie, if there's someone who needs access to rental help, can you give us a quick description of what's available?
Absolutely. In Eau Claire County, Buffalo, Trempealeau, Jackson, and Clark County, if you are behind on your rent or utilities, all you have to do is call Western Dairyland at 715-836-7511, extension 0, and you'll be directed to the right person, or you can fill out a form online at westerndairyland.org. Eligible households can receive up to 12 months of assistance to help with their current or overdue rent or utilities. There is a ton of money available. The eviction moratorium is going to end October 3rd. So if you're even remotely behind and were impacted by COVID, unemployment, loss of income, loss of wages, please reach out and get assistance before that moratorium ends.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining today. Have a great weekend. I'm Clara Neipert. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio.